Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Is butter a club?
I had a hunch you might be a real romantic.
We were decoys. He used us as bait. We procured for him.
We could have had a good life together. Fucking real good life. But you didn't want it, Ennis. So what we got now is Brokeback Mountain.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this week we are smashing taboos and turning our attention to incest in queer cinema. Mm-hmm. Think Brazilian Heart Wrencher from Beginning to End or English period piece Sister, My Sister. Our guest is Melbourne University senior lecturer and prolific writer Lauren Rosewarne, whose thesis Part-Time Perverts explores the incest trope in Western pop culture. We're speaking to Rosewarne about why so many queer films stake their plots on the representation of this taboo, because there are quite a few queer films that actually deal with incest and deal with it quite well, I think.
Hang on, Daniel. Before we get into this, I think we should have a general disclaimer.
Thank you, Ellen.
To our listener. Number one is that this show, Daniel has been threatening to do the show for at least 2.5 years.
Because apparently it's a trope.
Yeah. And Gina and I have steadfastly refused to do it for such a long period of time.
And all it took was one piece of cake and you conceded.
We did force you to bake cake.
So
for us.
Kind of feel as if we're here on suffering. On duress.
Well, that's the thing. I could only think of one film. When you're like, it's a trope. And I'm like, that ain't a trope, darling. There's one film, Sister, My Sister, I watched back in 1994. And then you produce your DVD collection and you're like, hey, Gina, take these home and watch. And I'm like, why are these in your DVD collection? No, you've got a proficient DVD
collection. Gina, you have a point. I mean, I wonder myself. I mean, like Daniel here comes from a largest family. I do believe he's a twin. I wonder if this is sort of coming out in today's show. I wonder.
We need to give Daniel help.
I'm not going to take the bait.
We are taking it.
I'm not even.
We are taking it.
There are so many films that do deal with incest. I mean, if we look at the broader kind of film.
Flowers in the Attic.
Savage Grace with Julianne Moore.
Blue Lagoon
with a
cousin. You know, they're cousins, aren't they, in Blue Lagoon?
Jamie Babbitt's The Quiet. Yeah, Pink Flamingos with Divine.
Yes, true.
Of course, Savage Grace. Cat People. The House of Yes. The Hotel New Hampshire. I mean, the list goes on and on. And within queer cinema, you know, there's a great many films that deal with sibling relationships. Mm. Films like Skeleton Twins, Crazy, that French-Canadian film.
That's a great film.
Yeah. Shame, which we looked at only recently.
Yeah. Yes.
But there are as well a number of films that deal with the relationship between siblings in a very sexualized way and do tap into this broader incest trope.
Mm. Now, I think to be fair to our audience as well, this might be a topic that triggers some people. It might not be a comfortable topic. So there's always, you know, Lifeline if you need to, 13, 11, 14. And just to also give a disclaimer that the films we are covering tonight, actually, yes, they're queer. Yes, they deal with incest, but they are dealing with consensual intimacy between adult siblings. So
I think
we should just put that out there before people turn off and go, you know what?
Can I put you on the spot?
I'm going to put it on.
Why do you feel the need? Why do you feel the need to say that?
Because I think some people have a different idea. When you say incest, there is a very different idea in some people's head that pops up, and that could be traumatizing. But the films that we have covered tonight, they are adult sibling relationships that cover these topics. So I think it's good for our listener out there, and they are consensual.
And they all deal with incest in very different ways.
Yes,
that's
correct.
Right.
So we're really taking a kind of broad survey of the genre as it's dealt with in queer cinema this evening.
Yeah.
And I think all of the films that we're looking at, I know the two of you don't really agree with me.
Oh, there's one film we think you're stretching the mark, and I'd love to hear how you...
I was going to say that they're all quality films.
Oh, no. I know you don't.
We're going to debate that quite a bit. In fact, why don't we debate that right away?
I'm speechless. You know, I'm literally speechless that you said they're all quality films. But you know, we'll move on and we will tackle each one as it comes.
And if you'd like to join this conversation / argument, please message in on 0427JOY949. Email us on air at joy.org.au. Let us know what you think of the films that we're going to be talking about tonight. One is Sister, My Sister. Another is called The Dreamers. I think
that's
we're covering
right, The
as
Dreamers.
Well.
And then this fantastic Brazilian film, which I just adore, but I know you two have a somewhat tepid response to. The film is From Beginning to End. And I think this is a film that deals with the trope more explicitly than any other film.
Without a doubt.
The other film that we're going to take a look at as well is the 2008 French film Give Me Your Hand, which stars real life twins and doesn't deal with explicit incest so much as it does incest in the silences. This film is really about all what's not said. I mean, that's the where the sexual tension exists in this film.
And that was a very good. That is a very good.
That's
film.
A great.
What's it called? Hand in my
Give
hand.
Give me your hand.
Give me your hand.
Give me your hand.
But we'd love to know what you, if you have seen these films, because some of these films have been around for some time, we'd love to hear what you think of them, especially something like Sister, My Sister, which is, what, 20 years old? Did you
24 years old.
24 years old shows my age. Do you still, did you see that as taboo if you first saw it? Would you see it as taboo now? Message in 0427JOY949.
I'm going to put you both on the spot and just pick you up a little bit here because I sense that both of you are quite nervous about or anxious.
We made you burn cake.
It's really not hard to sense that there is some trepidation about dealing with this topic. And I think we have to recognise that we're not actually looking at the morality or the lawfulness. We're not discussing this behaviour in any way. What we're looking at this evening is the way that this behaviour, the way that these sex acts, this kind of sexuality is represented in queer cinema. And we have to remember that not that long ago, seeing any kind of homosexuality in film was thought of in just this same way, and that people sitting in a studio discussing homosexuality as it is represented in cinema may well have gotten a little bit hot under the collar, may well have made jokes about, oh, well, you sit around men all the time, blah, 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 blah. I mean, I'm just saying that
you're right,
we're dealing with a taboo here. This is a taboo topic.
Yeah, and you're right. I think for me, when you said that we wanted to do this, explore this topic on our program, I was absolutely dead set against it because it made me feel uncomfortable. It's not something that, I really go out of my way to watch.
And now having seen four films pretty much this week to prepare for our chats this evening, how do you feel about the way that this subject matter is dealt with?
Well, see, the thing is I've become a little bit desensitized after watching so much of it in one go that, it's just another subject matter on the screen. And the thing is it's fiction.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's just simply the tension that the filmmaker can build into it by having the major protagonist to actually be related. So, it's intellectual and theoretical rather than
let's perhaps pick
real life for me.
Yeah, let's kick off with I think one of the more controversial films, which is the 2009 Brazilian film From Beginning to End from director Luzio Abrantes, starring I'm not even going to go there.
You're going to butcher the names?
This is a film about two brothers. They're half brothers, born to the same biological mother, who develop a relationship from beginning to end. I mean, from the day that Thomas, the younger brother, is born, his older brother Francesco really does warm to him in a way that is not quite typical, and a way that his mother and his father and his stepfather all apprehend somewhat nervously. But the wonderful thing I think about this film is that as that relationship progresses and as it becomes clearly something slightly more sexual and then clearly more sexual, much more sexual, no one actually challenges the relationship. And that's one of the wonderful things I think about this film. The tension in the film doesn't derive from any kind of antagonism within the film. The only antagonism in this film is the antagonism that we, as the viewer, bring to watching this, what is constructed the same way as any other romance on screen is constructed. And that's one of the things that I find so interesting about this film. We are, I think, the antagonists when we watch this. There's no antagonist in the plot.
Oh, that bloody voiceover and that score to it, though. Bloody hell.
Oh, my God, Tina.
Can I just say...
That was appalling, wasn't it?
I actually...
It was enough to make you vomit. It was saccharine.
It was soap opera saccharine kind of melodrama. For me, the beginning of the film, take out all those kind of extras. The relationship between these two young brothers who are extremely close was quite normal and natural, and I liked how it built on that. Like they were, any parent would want their two little children to be close, to be
loving, supportive, protective.
And that's what we see, this relationship. And we know it's going to go there because we've read, the film, the one-liner of the film. We've seen the cover of the DVD. But when you watch it going in cold, you wouldn't know there's anything unusual about, especially, as European families, we are close, we hug, we kiss, we are intimate with each other and can share our emotions quite openly. That's never been an issue with me amongst my Greek family. I love the moment the mother watches them after one of the boys has been injured. And it's her reaction to that moment, and the camera just, we just watch her, we stay with her
slow
as she's watching.
Into her face.
And that was what was powerful about this. It is the adult's perception of children not behaving sexually. They are just, it is an intimate relate. The brother is, playing with the other brother's hair while he's on a surgical bed, just had a cast put on.
Yep.
It's innocent, and if you look at that image without the rest of the story, it is innocent, but it's what the mother then brings
moment. This is it. Do you feel that in that scene that filmmaker is trying to communicate to us that the mother potentially sees the future of what this relationship could be, that she sees a sexualization of this relationship into the future?
You see a fear?
And she's intuiting this.
Yes.
Fear there.
Yeah, I see her fear.
It's not fear. It's apprehension. It's an understanding. Perhaps there is an element of concern in that what she's seeing is unusual, but there's no fear. Again,
when I read her face in that moment, I read, here's a mother seeing something for the first time in a bit of shock, trying to comprehend what she's seen, and saying to herself, is my instinct about my children correct? The next moment where she's then with the older sibling while the young one sleeps in his arms, asking him, is there anything, you ever need to talk to me, that's when we see that different side of her. So
but
the
it's
mother
complete acceptance that
it
we
is
see.
Acceptance because she's saying to the child, I'm opening a safe dialogue for you to talk to me about anything that you think you might need to tell me that's unusual. Mm-hmm. And she almost uses those kind of words that's not normal, but she can't, it's that conversation. For me, the mother drives this story. So the minute she's removed.
Well, the mother's removed from it for the second half.
Exactly. I hated it after that.
So this is the point, Gina. I think you make a very good point.
Well, that's when it becomes a romance.
Melodrama.
Here, this is the mother opening that dialogue, opening the door for a dialogue to take place in the future, should this relationship turn into a sexual one.
And then
the relationship becomes sexual. Do you think that's the catalyst?
Well, they don't let the audience even come up with that idea themselves because they tell you through voiceover and melodrama, because mummy's gone.
I agree that the way the film is constructed is somewhat elementary.
Fantastical, and even. It's a fantasy.
It is a fantasy. It is a romance, and most romances are fantasies. But what I was saying was that there is something elementary about the way the film's put together. A lot of the sequences don't kind of flow into each other with any kind of ease. It does feel very constructed, and it does feel sometimes like we're watching a TV soap opera. I mean, it feels like that sometimes. But I do applaud what the filmmaker has done here, and that is to give us a romance that is free from judgment and to kind of turn the kind of antagonism to make us into the antagonists here. And in fact, in an interview with the Star Observer back when the film was released, he said, The conflict of the film is more with the spectator. It's not in the film itself that much. It's more about who is watching and everyone reacts in different ways. I treated it as a very normal love story, which some people have criticized, but that's what I think it is, and I didn't want to judge the brothers.
And you know what? The first time I watched this film back in at MQFF at 2010, I felt exactly that same way. It made me squirm, and it really did have that effect on me. But watching it a second time, it really felt like I needed a shot of insulin afterwards because it was just so sweet. It was, look, you know, we had the eye candy of the boys. We had the
and
we
you
had
know
the
what?
Syrupy
I think
music.
He just needed another pair of eyes on this. He wrote, he directed, and he produced this, and had some of those. Let's tell the audience exactly what they should be thinking and feeling in this moment. Pulled out of this film, because that's where it lost. Mm. It lost me all the time. Well before, you know, when that funeral moment and the mother dies and then that kind of slow camp, you know, that steady camp thing they were doing there. It just, it was too much.
Now, you two are really kind of giving this film, I
both
think,
barrels.
a hard time. Uh-huh. But I do want to point out that the film opened in Brazil in just 9 cinemas and turned out to be one of the year's highest grossing films in Brazil.
No way.
But I don't know what else the Brazilians are into. What? I'm coming from a Melbourne, Australian female perspective.
So hang on. So they must have opened more cinemas. They must have opened more screens.
It was on the list of the top 10 most watched Brazilian films of 2009. It screened at more than 30 national and international film festivals, commercialized in over 30 countries. It grossed just over $500,000, which is not a lot.
That could also be the star power that's attached to it. So don't always think.
There's no star power here.
Oh, the mother was quite hot.
The brothers, the adult
men were gorgeous.
Yes, were they not?
Yes,
yes, they were.
Gorgeous.
They absolutely.
Can we come back to this Star Observer article? Because in this Star Observer article, the director noted that the film has appeal predominantly to gay men who are over 40. Wait, it gets better.
This is a whole other trope that we're talking about here.
The reporter asked Abranch, as the director, why do you think that is? And he said, I think maybe it's because, I'm quoting here, I think maybe it's because they've had to fight so much for rights and recognition that they find it too unreal to have a family like the brothers do, where being gay is not a big deal. But that was my experience. I had very supportive parents. Let me tell you, that's not why gay men over 40 enjoy this film.
It's like drawing a very long bow.
In fact, one of the jealous older possessive older brother, Francesco, even I would call him bisexual. I can't even imagine them having a homosexual relationship outside of their
each other.
Because
it's like, and you know, I sat down with Lauren Rosewarne earlier in the week to have a chat about what it is that makes these stories so profuse, why we do see so many films dealing with incest. One of the theories that Lauren postulates is that what incest films do is they ground the kind of romance that they depict in this kind of metaphysical, divine kind of attraction that the love is meant to be. And we see that in so many romances, but we do see that in films that deal with incest. And certainly we see that here, where what you call Alan Saccharin, that kind of music, the way it's filmed, the slow motion, is used to kind of give us this sense that the love is metaphysical, that there is something altogether divine about the attraction that these brothers have for each other. And yes, it's hard, Gina, to imagine that they would ever have a relationship with anyone else because it is meant to be.
But do you think that might be drawing from mythology as well, where gods, you know, the gods had incestuous relationships, and in fact in ancient cultures there was a lot of incestuous relationships going on to keep bloodlines pure. So this idea of this divinity, you're talking more like fate as opposed to divine.
I think he's trying to tell that story by the way the two brothers first meet, the fact that the younger brother's eyes are glued shut and only open weeks after when he meets his half-brother for the first time. So he's trying to layer upon layer all these kind
of
things.
Says the narrator.
It's a mystique. Yeah.
I was born with my eyes closed. My mother wasn't worried. She always says that when I was ready, I would open my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And when he does, he sees his brother. Yeah. I mean, it really does pander to those very...
Love at first sight. Yeah. That's what that is.
Absolutely. Mm. Well, we are taking a look at films this evening that deal with incest, that shatter that taboo, and there are a great many queer films that do so. From Beginning to End is just one of them. I really like this film. I think it is a little bit saccharine. I think it is a little bit melodramatic, but I do think it's sweet, and I do think it is a true romance. And I like that the director doesn't judge.
and he points at us when he says judge.
Look, like I said, I like... If you turn the volume down and just have the subtitles on, it's a beautiful film.
Actually do that.
Yeah.
Because you won't hear the voiceover on it.
You won't hear the voiceover. You know what? You won't have the shitty music.
Alan, I have a treat for you.
No. Don't.
I have a treat.
Don't do it. Oh no.
Get in the mood, people.
This is awful music.
No, honestly,
on repeat throughout the whole film.
Kudos to the young men who play the siblings in this film because it's done so beautifully.
Yeah.
The mother and even the father character, the stepfather character, is great in this. I felt like I was watching a different film when the older brothers were there, and maybe I'd be okay watching that, but yeah, it irked me to be seeing that story when we got to that.
Mm.
I think this music is beautiful.
But
I like this soundtrack.
But you also like Celine Dion. And sorry, joy listeners, I know a lot of you do.
Classic Gina. That's a zinger. That's got to go down for our end of year program. This is one of the best lines on
Outtakes. I reckon we get the academic on before we dig any more. Hey,
Daniel, can I say, as soon as I started watching this film again, as soon as that music played, it got my back up immediately. I just went, oh. That's right. I remember this from the first time I watched it. Hated it then, hated it now.
Can you remember what the audience was like when you watched it?
Oh, listen, it was full of men in their...
In their 40s?
In their middle-aged and older. And, you know, back then I was not middle-aged at that stage. That was 8 years ago. But you know, I would say that, you know...
Because I love the festival often plays films that will be divisive to an audience, and that's its skill, that when you leave and you go into the bar afterwards or the drinks area, you have something to talk about.
For sure.
Was it one of those films? Was everyone a bit traumatized?
I can't remember it. I mean, it was a packed cinema, absolutely packed. Yeah.
Well, we are chatting about films that do explore incest this evening, queer films that take on this taboo. More coming up, including our chat with a senior lecturer at University of Melbourne, Lauren Rosewarne, who's written in quite a bit of depth about the way that pop culture more broadly deals with incest. And we're speaking with Lauren right after this. You're listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening we are exploring queer films that deal with incest. And there are quite a number of them. We've just taken a look at the 2009 Brazilian drama From Beginning to End. We did have a little bit of a disagreement about this film, didn't we?
A little bit. Well, at least. Keep going.
We are now chatting with Lauren Rosewarne, who is a senior lecturer at the University of Melbourne. And we've spoken with Lauren on the program before. We had a chat with Lauren when we did our Sex on the Screen program, because Lauren does deal with all types of kind of sexual behavior in Western pop culture, particularly sexual behavior that is taboo. She writes a lot about this, and in her thesis Part-Time Perverts, Lauren explores the incest trope in Western pop culture. So she's a perfect guest for this program.
Absolutely.
I sat down with Lauren and...
Did you bake her cake too? No.
I did not have to bribe her to come on the program, unlike the two of you this evening. I sat down with Lauren and, of course, I had a chat with her about the way that this trope, the way that this behaviour represents itself in cinema.
Most representations are actually hinted to rather than shown. You know, there's a handful of examples where it's more explicit. You know, off the top of my head, The House of Yes is an example. But in most representations, it's actually a topic that's nudged to through one of the most popular tropes is, you know, a couple are dating and then, oh, shock horror, there's some sort of question about whether they actually share a parent.
Yes.
So it comes cast their relationship in a kind of kinky context. Generally, though, that fear is resolved rather quickly because most mainstream material isn't really going to want to end a narrative with a brother and sister or a half-brother and sister actually having had sex.
Well, I think this is what you called the incest possibility in your writing.
Yeah, and it's this idea of, you know, I'd written an article about a couple of films that I saw in close succession, The Judge and...
The Old Lady,
yeah,
and the Lady in the
and The Old Lady, and both of them had this, you know, really subtle plot point. It wasn't a major theme in either film, but in both examples, the major character was in a situation with a woman that raised the possibility that she was his half-sister. And I think it just is an odd... I think in real life, this is not a usual type story. So I think the fact that it does feature, not commonly, but there are examples, that it seems to me something I've written about quite a bit before, about the sort of nudging or hinting to perversion without actually going there in full.
I want to come back to the reasons why cinema might nudge to those possibilities. But before we come to that, we have noticed that there are quite a large, I think, number of queer films that deal with explicit representations of incest. So we're not just talking about a suggestion at the possibility of incest, but there are a number of films that really stake their plot around the taboo that is incest. Do you think that there is something about queer cinema that perhaps lends itself more to this theme?
Well, you could argue that queer cinema already is subversive. So the very fact that it's dealing with sexuality that's not vanilla, that's not mainstream, that's not considered to be normal, therefore it, you could argue that it's just an extension of an already taboo presentation. That said, I think there's also a likelihood that there's a borrowing from, for example, pornographic material. Both heterosexual and homosexual porn has long used incest as a theme, either explicit or implied.
In my mind, there are a notable number of queer films that deal with incest. And we're looking at From Beginning to End, Give Me Your Hand, Sister, My Sister, and The Dreamers, which are all, I think, very different but great examples of the way that queer cinema deals with incest. What do you think some of the reasons are that we do have films like these which deal so explicitly with incest?
When it comes to sibling incest, I think there's a kind of coming-of-age narrative that a lot of people relate to. Even if it's not that they actually had any sexual contact with their own siblings, nonetheless, siblings are brought up together in very close proximity, sometimes sharing bedrooms, if not sharing beds in some occasions. So that level of physical intimacy, particularly if the story is trying to be told that's a coming-of-age narrative and dealing with sexuality, it doesn't surprise me that sex becomes something that helps tell that story and illustrate this notion of closeness manifesting in sexual contact. I think, though, that for me there's a broader idea about the fact that it's titillating for audiences. You know, most of us don't want to actually imagine having sex with our own family members. That's actually revolting for most of us.
Yes.
But there's something sexy about the idea of other people transgressing sexual taboos and getting involved. So therefore there's a kind of vicarious, or more accurately voyeuristic element to it, where it's sexy because it's wrong, socially wrong, but yet it's also a little bit hot. And that idea of, you know, little droplets or nuggets of taboo sexual content, our pop culture is full of that. You know, even if the material doesn't necessarily make it explicit, it's a little gift for audiences who like salacious content.
Yes, well, this is something that you've written before. You said, by depicting incest outright or simply alluding to it, a safe thrill is gifted to us by that old dream factory of Hollywood where it can be excused as mere fantasy.
Yeah, and I think this is a lot of the ways that most people experience perversion is that arm's length voyeuristic way. So much of our pop culture touches upon sexual taboos such as incest, which gives us an opportunity to experience it without actually breaking the law.
Yes. Now, I wonder if you've seen a 2009 Brazilian film called From Beginning to End.
I haven't, no.
Okay. The reason I bring it up is because I know that elsewhere you've also argued that part of the appeal of incest is that the attraction is somehow divine, that there's a metaphysical element to it. And the reason I bring From Beginning to End up is because I think this is a wonderful example of a film which really tries to locate the incest that it explores in this kind of metaphysical divine attraction.
And when you read research on actual cases of incest, when you do sort of social science research on people who, for whatever reason, have got involved in real life transgressive relationships that involve incest, there's often a undercurrent in their explanation of feeling as though this was divine, as though we knew before we knew, that there was something that drew us together on a level that is far and beyond the normal couplings. And I think cinema does this even outside of incest narratives, likes to present a union as somehow foretold, you know, that it was in the stars, you know, you were destined to meet. And I think when it comes to incest presentations, some of them do have this element to it, that it's this idea that this is a kind of the heart knows what it that it wants and can't help itself, and therefore there's an excuse for it because it's bigger than the both of us. You know, a lot of the tropes and cliches we talk about love in, I think, have a heightened applicability when talking about something like incest.
I love this film. I know a lot of people don't. And I know it was very controversial when it was released. I wonder if there are any films that you think deal particularly well with this subject matter.
Yeah, that's tricky. I'm not sure that there are necessarily best case examples. You mentioned the dream. Well, I say that because there's also, because the nature of this material is still... there's an element of still it being obscure or at least associated with indie films. Production values are often lower. You know, this is the cliche about gay cinema. It's that a lot of it is actually bad and that's upsetting but predictable if you understand Hollywood economics and the fact that they just want to sell the most amount of tickets possible. Right. I think The Dreamers is a good example of a film that's actually quite beautiful visually and that has all the high production values, is executed like any other mainstream, you know, art house, but nonetheless well executed and looking like the kind of film that we would expect it to look visually.
We thought you might like to move your things here.
You barely even know me.
This is where we get to know you.
Up. What are you waiting for?
It's red. And ripe and luscious.
You two are like two halves of the same person.
Oh! Why are you two looking at me like that?
There's something I have been meaning to do for a long time, but we've been waiting for the right person to do it with. This is a test. Are you going to pass it or fail it?
You two are twins?
Yes.
You won't grow like this. Not as long as you keep clinging to each other the way that you do.
Go away!
Isabel!
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening we are exploring the way that incest is dealt with in queer cinema. Now, that was our chat with Lauren Rosewarne. Lauren is a senior lecturer at the University of Melbourne who has written in depth about all kinds of sexually taboo practices, including incest. And she's written about that in her thesis, Part-Time Perverts. So a real pleasure to speak with Lauren Rosewarne again. Following our chat with Lauren, that was, of course, the trailer to The Dreamers, which is a film that Lauren brought up in our chat. It's a 2003 romantic drama directed by Bernardo Bertolucci, starring Eva Green and Brady Corbett, and it is a
Michael Pitt
and Louis Garrel. And this is a story about two siblings, twins, a female and a male, who. Enter a relationship, I guess you could call it a relationship, whether or not it is, I mean, it is sometimes sexual, sometimes it is a platonic relationship with an American. And it's about their kind of carefree summer together, set against the backdrop of a kind of political tumult, and also as a kind of love letter to cinema. There's a lot of cinematic allusions threaded throughout this film, and I think the key reason that that is because this is a film, amongst other things, about spectatorship. And just as for the director of From Beginning to End, his interest was in our response as spectators. He was inviting us into the narrative and our reactions. This film, I think, does it even more explicitly, invites us to be spectators. I mean, the film opens in a cinema, and we have this wonderful monologue from Michael Pitt, his character, about cinema. Only the French, he says, would house a cinema inside a palace. It screens us to the world, satisfying our fantasies, he says. And that is then what the film, I think, sets out to do.
Goes out to try and do. When in actual fact, it's really just a menage a trois, really.
Well, I don't know that it is.
This could have easily have just been three people who are unrelated. And it's interesting how Lauren goes to say that often the idea of incest in a film is just simply there for titillation for the audience. It's
a little gift.
That was brilliant. She was brilliant when she said that. And I think this is probably the case for this film. It was a foil. It was a foil for that.
I don't know that I agree. I mean, this is a coming-of-age narrative. I think really all of the films that we're looking at this evening are coming-of-age narratives. And we know that sexuality is often a fundamental theme in coming-of-age narratives. We've looked at a number of coming-of-age stories on Outtakes over the years. And I think the kind of sexual relationship that the siblings in this film share is not simply there for titillation. I think it's saying something broader. I mean, for me, this was a film about play. The siblings are almost playing at being grown-ups during the film. Their parents go on vacation and are absent for the duration of the film. And it really kind of finishes with them having to grow up because of the political situation, kind of being thrust into this kind of political protest. But all the while, they are playing at having sex. Eva Green plays her role so wonderfully as this kind of young seductress. But it turns out, we find out, you know, toward the end of the film, that she's never actually had sex before.
But did you not find that at times their behaviour was callous and cruel?
Yes, it was, but that's the kind of
cruel intentions.
This kind of elitism that they have no regard for the consequences of their actions, you know? It reminded me of a novel. It actually reminds me of a novel by Donna Tartt, The Secret History.
Yes.
But it's this kind of carefree, kind of elitist attitude of the kind of upper class teenagers.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it?
And that's really what this film is about.
Yeah, boom. Yeah, totally.
Well, we are exploring the way that queer cinema deals with incest on Outtakes this evening. We've looked at From Beginning to End and just then briefly touched on The Dreamers, which really was a very divisive film. I have to actually say it completely divided critics. The New York Times said of the film that it was disarmingly sweet and completely enchanting and described it as fusing sensual discovery with political tumult. But then The Times said that it was a heady blend of The Last Tango and Stealing Beauty, but one that combines the grubby voyeuristic elements of each film rather than their strengths. So,
you know what? That is commentary at both ends of the spectrum, and I guess you could probably find a middle ground.
Which I dare say Rotten Tomatoes has done. That is, of course, a critics aggregator site, and it gives it a review of 61%, a fresh rating, but that is somewhere down the middle, I would say.
Middle to bad. That's middle
to bad. It's certainly not a glowing review.
It is not at 61%. No.
Well, one film, Gina, that I think you will be giving a glowing review to is Sister, My Sister.
Are you typecasting me as lesbian? Put in a full female production on... It was a full female production on Sister.
It was.
Yes,
it was.
We're going to be looking at Sister, My Sister, as well as a beautiful French film, Give Me Your Hand, right after this. You're listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening we are shattering taboos and looking at the representation of incest in queer cinema.
Now, the film Sister, My Sister from 1994, I'm really surprised has not gotten as much attention as it should for the quality of film that it is. It's basically a film set in France in the 1930s based on a true story of the Papin sisters. Go Google the Papin sisters.
Fascinating.
The two sisters are, the film is about two sisters that are separated in childhood who reunite years later as servants at a household in France. Their happiness to be reunited, spirals into an incestuous and murderous relationship.
Ooh. Incest and murder.
Murder.
Oh.
Very good. 150 francs a month. Sundays free until 4.
Sleep, my little sister, sleep.
In a beautiful house, kept perfect by the perfect servants.
Sisters.
We have pearls on our hands. Two pearls.
Everything is in its place.
Madame is so precise, so careful.
But she doesn't let us get away with a thing.
Why should she? It's her house. It's better that way.
But beneath the respectable exterior,
these two are different. You mark my words.
They're bound for life, bound in blood.
Something is stirring.
And they've always kept themselves.
Every Sunday up in that room.
That cannot be denied.
Christy, it's beautiful. It's you who are beautiful.
That cannot be controlled.
My angel.
Now I see.
And can only be ended.
They're getting careless.
She's things.
This is impossible.
Things that aren't even there. Her and her daughter.
By a shocking act of violence.
It's amazing. I don't even look like Maeve anymore.
You never stick up for me!
Don't be angry with me.
You're all I have, Leah. You're all I'll ever have.
Going to church every Sunday thinking you were a child of God?
Oh, madame, stop, please.
God forgive me for what I have harbored here.
Sleep, my little sister, sleep. Sleep through darkness, sleep so deep. My little sister, close your eyes.
Thank God the art of trailer making has evolved in the last 24 years. That's all I can say after listening. I mean, creepy trailer, I'll grant it that. Love Julie Walters, but a bit of a dull trailer.
It wasn't really, didn't sell the story much,
I mean, because I have to say this is actually a good film.
It is.
I did enjoy this film.
It was funny, I had to go back to watch it, and that's the thing after watching these other films. And I can't remember how I felt at the time when I watched it. I was much younger. I would have been a late teenager at the time that I watched the film. And I remember thinking, oh, my God, this is based on a true story. This actually happened.
Mm.
But it is the story of societal repression, of sexual repression, of so many things. These sisters are kind
class.
Of... Yeah, class. Mm. It's bigger Money. Than just the incestual relationship that's at play here. It is like you kind of go, oh, I get it. You sympathise with the protagonist.
Well, you know how we're talking about how often people who fall into an incestuous relationship see that it's fated, it's divine, it was bound to happen. Well, I think in this situation here, we see society, this house, their position in society, all conspired for them and their relationship with their mother and the fact that they were so isolated and had no other friendships, that this was inevitable, that this was bound to happen. And I think that comes out very clearly in this film. You get that real sense that it was inevitable.
And also the relationship of the older sister. Like, this is a cautionary tale it's kind of played out that way, that, you know, go down this path, ladies. And
what do you mean?
Well, you know, that kind of... the incestuous kind of stuff, the lesbian sort of stuff, all that sort of stuff. You know, it's like those original kind of queer films that were kind of warning us away from, you know, what she says at the end, you know, look what I've harbored, you know.
Why?
It's but not quite as sympathetic a representation as something like From Beginning to End.
Look, I think it's a great film. The trailer's dated, but the film hasn't dated. It kind of... I think it still stands up. It's pretty good.
Mm.
It was, of course, made in the early 90s, released in 1994. I mean, I do think it's dated a little bit, but I don't think anything about Julie Walters ever really dates. And I think, I actually think they're all really good in this.
So for me, Jolie Richardson.
That's what I was going to say. Sorry. Yeah, that's where it was at for me. Oh,
sorry. And Jodie Marr as well. Mm. I mean, like, fantastic. Like, you know, brilliant actresses, actors in this film. And I think the only time we actually heard a male voice was right at the end of the film. We had a voiceover when they were in court.
It doesn't surprise me either that the film is directed by Nancy Meckler, who is predominantly a stage director. And there was something very theatrical.
I think there was a play based on
it. Well, based on a play.
Yeah.
So this film is based on a play. Nancy went on to direct only one other film called Alive and Kicking, which was also a queer film, interestingly enough, more explicitly so even. Look, an interesting film, and yet another interesting counterpoint to this broader conversation that we're having this evening about the way that incest is dealt with in queer cinema. This is a very different kind of representation to the representation, the kind of playfulness with which incest is approached in The Dreamers. And there is a kind of playfulness to it and the kind of sympathetic approach that's used in From Beginning to End. And then again, still different from the kind of representation we see in Give Me Your Hand, which is a 2008 French film directed by Pascal Alex Vincent and starring real-life twins, Alexander and Victor Carroll. And again, this is, like all of the films we've looked at this evening, this is a divisive film. It's a film about two brothers who set out from their hometown, a small town in France, to go to their mother's funeral, who they learn has died. And it's really a road...
In Spain.
It's a road trip
to Spain.
It follows them as they kind of travel hitchhiking across Europe to their mother's funeral. And it's about, it's a coming of age story. So it's about how they grow on this journey. And while incest isn't explicitly represented in this film, it is laced through absolutely every moment of this film, I think, and it is most powerful in the film's silences. I mean, that's where this film packs its punch.
Daniel,
it's a great film.
When I first started watching the film, I went, oh no, they're twins. Oh, don't tell me we're going to see a scene where they're going to kiss. That really made me feel uncomfortable, the very thought that these two actors, twins in real life, would actually have to kiss in the film. So I was very relieved by the end of the film that wasn't going to take place.
That's true. I don't know that that's
but we
true.
Can get,
there
we can come
lip lock at the end.
We can come back to that. But you're absolutely right. I think this film was just amazing in the silences. There was those pauses. It was the looks.
It was the looks, and it was that kind of, you know, it's everything that was hinted to, and that's what your interview was covering before. Because while they don't have that intimacy with each other, I mean, the other film where the brothers are so close, these ones are bashing each other at every opportunity, smacking each other over the head, smacking food out of each other's hands, wrestling in the woods. But they do observe each other having sex with other partners and how they deal with
that. And if I can come back to From Beginning to End, maybe that's what the film was lacking. Maybe it could have used a little bit more.
They all played in the surf in both films, but very differently.
Yes.
Yeah.
look, there is a certain playfulness in this film as well. It's interesting that kind of wrestling should feature and indeed kind of, if we take it to its extreme, should feature in these films, because it's almost as though the incest in some of these films is really a kind of a way to channel out some kind of repressed feeling. These films are about repression, and they're about feelings that dare not speak their name. And I think the fighting in this film, because the brothers do wrestle, especially toward the end, where they have this kind of ultimate wrestle which nearly kills one, and then the other has to perform CPR on him, which gives him the opportunity to actually lock his lips with his brother, and is a stand-in for the kiss that, of course, the film could never have, because then it would have been just
too creepy.
Well, no, it wouldn't have been creepy. What it would have done was it would have kind of dispelled all the tension that the film kind of mounts as it goes. And by giving us that kiss, but not really giving it to us, but kind of giving it to us, I think it kind of confirms.
Was an anticlimax?
No.
It was an anticlimax. I think
it confirms that the film, because Gina, you messaged me as you were watching this film.
I was having fun, kind of going, it's not romantic.
You said
I thought it was going to turn into Misery. Thank God it went into.
But I think you were struggling to see.
I was struggling to see the links.
Yeah.
Because this is for me two really repressed. You know, I don't want to swear, brothers that are going through a really tumultuous time that are not bonded, that are not...
They're
identical twins, but they're two polar opposites.
But, such a love-hate.
No, but the brothers themselves describe it when he meets the boy that he goes off to in the woods. He says, my brother's the one with friends and he's the quiet artist.
Yes.
They are two absolute opposites that are kind of forced to go on this trip together. They don't want to walk beside each other half the time.
It's interesting because
at the start of the film, you see them, they're very affectionate, very close at the start of the film when they're starting to embark on their journey.
In the animated sequence at the beginning there.
Yeah, but you know, at one stage there you see that he's holding onto his brother's shirt.
Yeah, that's true.
He's being carried by his brother, and you can see that there is a lot of love there as well. Yeah. It's definitely a love-hate relationship. Yeah. And, of course, you're looking at your mirror. You're looking at your twin.
And you can see the jealousy between them as well you know, the first brother's having sex in the back of the car, and the jealousy and all those kind of scenes are stemming from...
But you see, there are so many parallels here to the Dreamers because, yes, they are so different that they are kind of yin and yang, but that is precisely what Matthew, the American, says to Theo and Isabella. In The Dreamers. He says, quote, you're like two halves of the same person. And that is precisely what the twins in Give Me Your Hand are. They are like two halves of the same person, and they do come together at the end in that kind of stand-in for a kiss. Added to that, we have the kind of parallels with kind of playfulness and wrestling and this kind of coming-of-age narrative that both films chronicle.
But even the story on the train of the imaginary sister and how he kind of takes that on board, and how even when his brother was in danger as a child, he never protected him kind of thing when he was sleepwalking. So, look, we are running out of time. But this is a really good film. It is a very slow, quiet, gorgeous film. I never kind of strayed from wanting to watch it. Starts with animation, then goes into live action. Yeah. And then we see the kind of drawings throughout. I would have loved to see more of that going
Me
back
too.
To a
It's
bit
interesting because I really did enjoy this film. In fact, I have it on DVD.
Yes, you do. I bought it.
But rewatching it this week, I thought it would have worked better as a short. I thought if it had been a short film limited to just the initial kind of sexual encounter and the way that the brother kind of watches the sexual encounter jealously, I think that was the most powerful scene, and I thought it could have worked very well as a short.
I get your point, but I feel that the film wasn't properly resolved because, after all, they were journeying to go to Spain to their mother's funeral. So I was expecting some sort of climax, some crescendo there. Well, but it was a fizzle.
We got it.
We got another fight.
You know, when he goes to pimp his brother out in the toilets and he almost gets raped, he needed that kind of coming apart and coming together again and almost coming apart again. So. Yeah. I was really impressed by the film.
I rate it
highly recommend people.
And the fact that it's only got 5.5 on IMDb is a crashing disappointment. It deserves more than that.
Yeah, it does.
Well, look, it's been an interesting and controversial evening.
We survived it. Let's go have cake.
You did survive it. You made it through.
It's done now, Gina. We never have to do it again.
That's on podcast, though. Anyway, we love you, Daniel. Let's do lesbian tropes next.
Love your cake
lesbian
better.
Lesbian tropes next.
That's it for another week on Outtakes.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.